Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the M&A podcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. In this episode, we're hearing from a fund that specialises in financing situational complexity. Northwall Capital is an alternative private credit lender active in the European market. Founding partner Alex Garnier spoke to Rachel Lewis, who's co-head of news for Merger Market. They spoke about the rise of specialist credit in Europe, how companies stand to benefit from the asset class, and how firms like Northwall can capitalise on complexity and bank retrenchment. Plus, how will the strategy hold up in a more stressed market?
Northwall Capital describes itself as focused on situational complexity, and that's really where I want to start this podcast, this conversation. What does situational complexity mean in today's lending market? And what does this mean in practice? You know, what kind of situations are you actually financing?
We at Northwall focus on situations that have some element of situational moment in time complexity. What does that mean? That means that there's something about the situation that makes a standardized, traditional funding or lending approach difficult to apply. So in practice, that might be a complicated layered capital structure or something like a tight, hard transaction deadline, or perhaps a business whose profile doesn't fit a vanilla underwriting template. That might be because we need to underwrite a recent change in the business, or it's a complex carve out, or it might just be simply a moment in time where capital in the market, particularly as it pertains to that particular sector or business, might be constrained.
So that's a good high-level overview. Have you got any specific examples that we can point to just help the listener understand in a little bit more detail?
So, you know, a very simple example, without getting into the specifics of a particular situation, might be where you have an acquisition. Acquisition financing solution is required. We've had one particular situation where the second highest bidder in a process received a call when the highest bidder failed to close and acquired a financing solution very quickly. They had lined up a syndicate of banks. One or two of the banks were unable to move as quickly as required, and had the bank syndicate not been closed together with our solution, the process and potentially the target would have fallen away. So that's the kind of situation we might get involved in. Similarly, in a refinancing process, you might have a set of banks or other lenders that are willing to extend, but one or two have an aversion to that particular sector and there's some sort of time pressure. It might be a maturity or an audit that's coming up and you really need to get that extension in place.
Okay, I think that's quite an interesting differentiation here when we talk about lending in general. So Northwall Capital is financing solutions perhaps both in the LBO market and the refinancing market. And also, is there then any instances where you're just lending to companies, you know, in this kind of non-sponsored universe to help them with growth or other areas where they might need some fresh capital in the business?
Yes, absolutely. So there might be situations where an acquisition, an add-on acquisition has been identified and needs financing. It might be that you could extend the existing facilities, or you might need a second lien or even a holdco solution. And that's where we might become relevant. I think there are lots of situations that just don't fit a standard template or are time pressured, where the underlying business or the target are performing very well, but for one reason or another, it just doesn't tick all the boxes that might otherwise be ticked.
Because I think that's something we haven't really discussed yet, but I believe, so Northwall, it's only performing credit, right? This is not kind of special situations in disguise, even though it's complex situations.
That's right. We look for situations where businesses are performing, where the operations and the liquidity of the business are in a comfortable place. You know, ideally, there's a dry powder from the owners of the business, which might well be a private equity sponsor. But for one reason or another, such as the situations I described with an acquisition or a refinancing, or perhaps we have to underwrite a run rate, a recent change in the business, or there's some sort of complexity with the acquisition or a carve out, situations that are just a little bit more complicated, but not necessarily anything to do with the performance of that particular business.
Okay, so that then lends me on to thinking around the distinction between specialist credit as yourselves and vanilla direct lending. You know, I know that you actually launched a senior lending strategy quite recently, but do you think the kind of the distinction between the two is becoming sharper, or perhaps, you know, even more blurred as large US managers move into the space as well?
I think it is becoming sharper. As we know, direct lending, both over in the US and in Europe, has scaled enormously over recent years. And there are some very large platforms, including US managers, that have moved over into Europe that offer a fairly standardized product. And I think that's good for the market. It's good for businesses, for companies and their sponsors, because, you know, Europe in particular has been underserved for a very long time. But I think one of the consequences of this is that anything outside of those more standardized parameters becomes more clearly, you know, defined. So in the lower mid-market, in particular, in smaller transaction sizes, where there's a bit of complexity in the way I described, we find those situations are less well covered. And there's a white space, and there's a real need for capital and for certainty of capital. And there we can, you know, still influence structure, have real covenants, and have pricing that's appropriate for the risk reward, rather than compete purely on price. That's where we operate.
Okay. And I guess, you know, this timing element, as you said, being able to move at speed is perhaps more important than it's been in the past few years. My job, I cover auctions here at MergerMarket. I can see just by watching the market that auction timelines are accelerating back from the slow period that we saw, you know, 2022, 2023. We've seen a lot of preempts. We've seen bidders come in announcing deals just days after MBOs recently. And do you think that's kind of an area where you will look to play as well?
We do get involved in backing sponsors and others in those processes. So if a competing bidder is moving faster and able to get certainty of capital, then the transaction fails for the partner we might be working with. And in those situations, you know, no amount of, you know, looser or cheaper capital really makes up for the loss of the transaction as a whole. And in some cases, you know, you have very tight exclusivity periods. So you might have a non-binding offer process, and then you might have two or three bidders that are selected as you work towards the binding offer. And in those processes, you really need to join hands amongst the funding parties, both the private equity sponsor and also the financing providers, to make sure that you are working very closely together. There's access to information and management, so you can underwrite a business very quickly. And so it does have a real cost. It can have a, you know, direct cost as in loss of the transaction. And so it's very important to have certainty of that capital very quickly.
Okay, we're going to come on to capital structure mechanics a little bit later, but I just wanted to go back to this kind of area we were previously discussing around the structural supply gap in capital. The ECB published some data in April, which shows that bank credit standards were tightening further in the first quarter of this year, which is the sharpest since 2023. You mentioned that, you know, you can fill in some gaps where bank syndicate is not quite ready or able to act. So does it register as kind of a meaningful shift in the deal flow that you're seeing?
At the margin, yes. Although I'd frame it very carefully. I think more standardized requirements for the banks, and for that matter, for direct lenders as well, to some degree, do push to the surface certain situations that might already have been marginal for banks, or it might just be a case of lower leverage, in which case there might be space for a junior capital solution as well. I'd be cautious about over-indexing on that as a cyclical driver, because most of the interesting situations we've looked at over the years, and we've been doing this at Northwall for 9 years, almost 10 years now, were never in scope for banks to begin with. You know, the sort of complexity that we've talked about, situational complexity, whether it's a complex layered capital structure, whether it's a timing pressure, whether it's having to underwrite a recent change in the business or a complex carve out, really, you know, predates a tightening cycle. But there's no doubt that the banks pulling back in terms of leverage from certain sectors and even certain jurisdictions is absolutely creating a white space and more deal flow.
Okay, so are there any situations where you know you've told a company or a sponsor that this lending situation is not for you? You know, what does that look like?
We do that quite often. It might be that, you know, we just cannot underwrite a business because we don't have the relevant expertise, or there are too many known unknowns. You know, AI is a common theme these days, as we're all seeing and reading. Or more simply, you know, if a bank can access a well-priced bank facility or vanilla direct lending solution, then that's almost certainly going to be the right outcome for them, especially if they can get higher leverage, more leverage than we're comfortable with, then, you know, we'll say that directly to a counterparty. Absolutely.
That's a good point, actually. You know, speaking on leverage levels, where would you say that you are typically comfortable?
I think, you know, what's important for us is at the outset to structure our facilities, not just for the base case, but also for the downside scenario. And that's where we do most of our work. You know, we think that's best for us and best for the equity and also for the senior lenders if we're in a junior position. So it's situation specific, but it's important not to over lever businesses, not to build in so much PIK that you're eating up the equity over time and there's a mismatch of incentives between the lending and the equity part of the capital structure. It's a long-winded way of saying, you know, sensible leverage is important. You know, whether it's 3x or 4x or 5x really depends on the business in question, its cash flow profile, and the valuation of that business.
Okay, and you kind of answered the next question for me, but let's just do it anyway. So, you know, Northwall, you can, I believe, deploy across the capital structure. In practice, where do you most commonly land? You mentioned junior there, but has this shifted since you've launched various different strategies, or is that still the core of what you do?
You know, most commonly, even in our credit opportunities and capital solutions product, we land in the first lien or unitranche part of the capital structure. We go where we're needed the most, and that can be especially more complex structures in a more junior position, whether that's second lien or mezzanine or even a holdco, or very occasionally in a debt-like pref equity structure as well. Now, the launch of our senior lending product, it represents a deliberate expansion into the more senior, less complex situations that we see, both sponsor and non-sponsor backed. In both cases, whether it's credit opportunities or senior lending, we look for solid performing credits. But the senior product is for situations where a lower cost of capital makes sense from a risk-reward perspective, and credit ops for more complexity. What we've found over time, actually, is that the two products are very synergistic. Quite often we're speaking to the same borrowers and the same sponsors. And on a case-by-case basis, one or other of those products might be the more relevant one for the situation.
I can understand that you get the same thing in equity now as GPs, private equity firms launch more strategies. They're like, okay, well, maybe this could fit in our small cap, maybe in our mid cap, essentially. So it would make sense from your side to be able to deliver multiple different solutions to borrowers and sponsors as well. One thing we haven't really talked about is, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong and you don't think this is relevant, but are there any instances where you work in where you're coming in and resolving existing capital structures which might be impeding a business and providing any capital to resolve that?
Yes, that is common. Quite often you'll see a business with a capital structure that's grown organically rather than by design and is led through acquisitions and with multiple instruments. So you might have a super senior revolving credit facility, a first lien, you know, perhaps a second lien for an acquisition, even shareholder loans and seller deferred notes and payments in there and so on. I think the issue that sometimes creates is that those different stakeholders can have different incentives and different timeframes and even different security packages. And at some point, that kind of structure can become an obstacle rather than an asset to the business. And the management and the sponsor is spending more time worrying about maturities and managing those creditors than running the business. And so we have been in situations where we've consolidated or refinanced parts of that capital structure into a single facility, you know, whether that's a first lien or a unit tranche with a single document and a single counterparty, which doesn't just solve, you know, the financing problem, but also frees up management bandwidth to do the day job, which is, you know, dealing with the operations of the business and growing the business for its next phase. So it doesn't just have a financial benefit, but also an operational benefit for the business.
And what does that inter-creditor negotiation sometimes look like? You know, from my perspective, when I'm hearing about businesses coming to market, it's quite common to hear, oh God, the capital structure is in a terrible position. Who's typically the hardest party to move? Or is there generally quite often a consensus that this needs to be fixed?
If you have a situation which is a little stressed, then it becomes easier because it's the benefit of all parties that new capital comes in. And there may be less of a negotiation as to where that capital comes in, which will often be at the top of the capital structure. But if a business is underperforming or needs new capital, despite the different views of the different stakeholders, it will be invariably to the benefit of, you know, the equity, the junior creditors and the senior creditors to have a structure which allows that fresh capital. From our perspective, I think what we're always looking to do is to have a structure where the party, where the value breaks, to have the ability to efficiently cure the situation. So whether that's with an injection of capital, with a capital structure reset, or a change in strategy. So we, at the outset, try and structure those transactions, be they senior or unitranche or junior, to have a material position in the capital structure and have the ability to structure a solution to be able to step in, to be able to solve funding or strategic gaps as they evolve. So we would tend to avoid, you know, very thin positions in a capital structure or those that involve a minority position where you don't really have a say. And you, what you really want is to be able to step in and have a conversation and solve those situations well in advance of the business and the collateral for all parties deteriorating.
Thank you, Alex. This wouldn't be a podcast about lending if we didn't at least touch a little bit on the private credit landscape in general. I'm sure you will have some views on it. You know, there is a growing narrative that private credit is about to face its real first stress test. We've got rising PIK usage, some quite high profile leveraged loan defaults. First of all, what do you think of that? But then secondly, you know, how does a specialist credit strategy behave perhaps differently to private credit when conditions deteriorate?
I think, you know, a lot of the framing that we hear bundles very different strategies together. Bank lending is different from direct lending is, you know, different from where we are in the market. There's no question that in some parts of the market, leverage has stretched significantly. And that's a real issue for some of those portfolios that we see out there. To, you know, touch on something like software, for example, you know, we've seen many transactions with sometimes 20 times enterprise values and, you know, double digit leverage. We've seen idiosyncratic issues as well with the likes of First Brands and Tricolor and MFS in the UK, where underwriting perhaps wasn't as tight as it might otherwise have been. The market that we're in, which is private credit, but a sub-segment of private credit, has a different risk profile. Because we tend to be the sole or lead lender, we tend to have a bilateral conversation with counterparties and management teams and diligence providers. And the information flow we have is significantly better than it might be in a more broadly syndicated situation. Similarly, we're able to structure our products such that, you know, covenants are real and they bite well in advance of situations deteriorating, real security packages, and so on.
You touched on it there, but that was going to be my next question, is what does good underwriting look like for you at Northwall Capital and more broadly in the market right now, as we're coming into a business, into an environment where there's a lot of dry powder in the market, sponsors need to get deals done, it's a bit more competitive, but we can't go back to the kind of brazen deployment that we saw in 2021, where everything just seemed to get a little bit crazy in terms of standards?
I think actually, you know, there's an opportunity set that we're seeing on our desks at the moment, which is, you know, better than it has been over the last few years. When you have uncertainty in the macroeconomic environment, as we see today, and you have some of the noise around private credit more generally and specific sectors within that, it means that not only banks, but also, you know, direct lenders retreat to a degree that they haven't over the last few years, which gives you the opportunity to really pick and choose within segments that are underserved, sometimes for good reasons, the leaders and the performing businesses within that, where you can structure real protections, decent leverage, and have real, you know, risk reward opportunities that we haven't seen for a long time.
So you're kind of not planning any retreat. You're quite happy to be operating in this kind of market.
Absolutely. We see an opportunity set. You know, if you're not chasing volume and you're not chasing relationship transactions, there's a huge amount of opportunity out there.
Okay. And just kind of one final question before I bring this to a close. Just think about, as you mentioned, specialist credit is a subset of private credit. What this means when you think about raising capital from your LPs, you know, if you're advising an LP, if I was advising an LP, trying to understand whether they need a specialist credit allocation on top of their direct lending exposure, what's one thing that you'd want them to understand?
The important thing to understand is that this isn't simply a riskier or higher returning version of direct lending. It's a different strategy with fundamentally different return drivers. So direct lending is really a function of spread, compression, and leverage. Whereas the return drivers where we operate are about identifying and solving problems that aren't generally accessible to more standardized capital. So these are not really competing strategies. This is access to situations that are less correlated with the market. And, you know, it's a more robust position to build a private credit allocation across these strategies than to double down on one or the other.
And how do you think more broadly about your returns versus private, vanilla private direct lending?
because we operate in a market where certainty, flexibility, and speed are more important than, you know, 100 or 200 basis points of spread, you know, in my opinion, and of course I'm biased, the risk reward that we see in our segment of the market is, you know, vastly superior than what you might see in the direct lending market.
Okay, I think that's a pretty good place to end on. We've covered a lot of topics there. So I just want to say thank you very much to Alex for joining us on the podcast today.
That was Merger Markets' Rachel Lewis speaking to Alex Garnier, the founding partner of Northwall Capital. And just to point out, this episode was recorded on Friday, the 15th of May. Thanks for listening to Dealcast, the M&A podcast from Merger Market. For more information about this conversation, have a look at our show notes. Follow and subscribe on your favourite podcast app, and do join us again next time.